Okay, good morning. My name is Steve Osberg. I'm with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'm a graduate student in the Soybean Agronomy Department, and today I'm going to talk about modeling soybean emergence using proximal sensing. I will say before I start that we collected a lot of data this summer. I hope to be able to present the results of those data today. Unfortunately, the data is still in the hands of a third-party lab that's post-processing that data. So today I'm going to focus on our materials and methods. So there are several factors that can affect soybean emergence, such as moisture, temperature, soil conditions, pathogens, all which have the capability to drastically reduce your soybean emergence in your plant population. One of the traditional methods of determining soybean plant population in a field is to count all the plants within a predetermined area, repeat that process several times throughout the field, and then extrapolate those counts for the entire field. Of course, we know that that's a very subjective and a highly variable process. It's also quite time-consuming. Soybeans do have the capability, as we kind of just talked about in the last talk, to accommodate some reduced populations by branching. In Wisconsin, Conley and Gaska found that the optimal population is about 250 to 300,000 plants per hectare. If your populations start to fall significantly below that, the grower needs to make a decision on whether they do a fill-in plant or a replant. But that decision needs to be made in a timely manner because, as you can see in the graph on the bottom right, planting time frame is on the x-axis and yield is on the y-axis. In Wisconsin, after mid-May, each day that you delay planting, you see a kind of an ever-increasing incremental decrease in yield potential. And we also have to have planting completed by June 20th to allow the plants enough time to reach maturity. So you've got a process that is variable, time-consuming during a busy part of the year, and a kind of a limited window in order to perform that process and make a decision off the information. So what we wanted to do is perform a study to see if we could use proximal sensing instead to predict soybean emergence and plant population. A few notes on the trial is conducted at the Arlington Ag Research Station. We had two location years. We actually did both location years this past summer. We collected spectra at the BE, BC stage, plus B1, B2, and B3. We had two varieties by 14 seeding rates, 37 to a little over 500,000 seeds per hectare, representing a very low to a very high plant population, 38 and 76 centimeter row widths. And then we did this study in a conventional and then a no-till field as well, a total of 112 plots per location year. So for the proximal sensing part, proximal sensing is essentially just a subset of remote sensing. Remote sensing is commonly associated with satellite imagery or aircraft-mounted sensors, whereas proximal sensing, you're much closer to the object being studied, such as a low-flying UAV or a handheld sensor. And so the sensor that we're using and what we're studying, so we're using a spectrometer to study plant reflectance. So when solar radiation interacts with the plant, one of three things can happen. Some of the energy can be absorbed, such as in the process of photosynthesis. Some of the energy can be transmitted through the plant, but some of the energy can be reflected back, and we can measure that energy that's reflected off the plant with a device called a spectrometer. And if we take the energy at each wavelength that's reflected off the plant and divide it by the total solar radiance at that time point, then we can get what's called percent relative reflectance. And I have a spectra on the right-hand side that is an example of what percent reflectance might look like for some typical plants. And essentially, so on the x-axis, it's the wavelength, and on the y-axis, it's the amount, the percent of total solar energy that the plant is reflecting in that particular wavelength at that time. So the first step before you go out and purchase a spectrometer, there's a lot that are available on off the shelf that can do a lot of different things, but you have to kind of figure out what wavelength you want to measure. So we decided that we would shoot for about the 350 to 1700 nanometer range. 350 to 700 gives you the visible range where a lot of the plant pigments are active, and then the 700 to up into the 1700 nanometer range is the part of the infrared spectrum, which is more associated with differences in plant structure. So our study objectives were develop an efficient system for collecting percent reflectance in the 350 to 1700 nanometer range, and then mount the system on a tractor and drive it through our soybean plot so we can collect a lot of spectra throughout the early part of the season. So as I mentioned before, to get percent reflectance, you need to divide what the plant is reflecting by the total solar radiance at that time point. A common way to do this is to collect the reflectance from a white panel reference standard. The challenge with this is it's a time-consuming process, and it has to be done very often throughout your spectra collection, because even on a clear, sunny day, the total solar radiance changes as the sun traverses across the sky. So we calculated we would have had to basically collect a white panel reference standard after every single plot. It just wasn't going to work for us, so we needed to figure out a better way to do it. And so the system that we ended up with was the brainchild of Dr. Alasdair MacArthur from the United Kingdom, and we put it together with the assistance of Phil Townsend's lab at the University of Wisconsin, and it's dubbed the Piccolo. I don't know why they call it that, but that's what it is. So some highlights of the system. So starting with the spectrometers. So you can go out and you can buy one spectrometer that'll measure 350 to 1700 nanometers. But to get a good quality spectrometer that measures that range, they're very expensive. It would have far exceeded the total budget that we had for the project. So our workaround for this was to purchase two spectrometers, both from Ocean Optics. One is called the Flame. It measures 350 to 1,000 nanometers. The other is called the NearQuest, and it measures the 900 to 1,700 nanometer range. Pairing them together gives us the full range. So our next step was to figure out how we were going to control the light that's going to go into these spectrometers. And so that's where this system uses a couple of camera shutter tubes, essentially. And the way they work is this. So on the left-hand side, I seem to have lost my cursor. On the left-hand side, we have two shutter tubes. And so there's one that's pointing up, and that is collecting the total solar radiance. And then the other shutter tube is pointing down, and that's collecting the reflectance from the plant. Out of each shutter tube, there's two fiber optics. Those fiber optics go to each of the spectrometers. So that's what conveys the light to the spectrometers. So the way the system works is essentially when we want to collect total solar radiance, the bottom shutter closes, the top shutter opens, we collect a spectra on solar radiance, and then when we want to collect plant reflectance, then we reverse it, the top shutter closes and the bottom shutter opens. And we just keep alternating back and forth, so we're collecting reflectance spectra and then a corresponding total solar radiance spectra, and we just do that as we go through the field. The entire system is controlled by a Raspberry Pi microcomputer loaded with custom software that was written by Dr. MacArthur. This is a couple of pictures of what the system looks like in real life. So on the left-hand side picture, we have our shutter tube. We have an upward pointing camera, or an upward pointing shutter, and then a downward pointing shutter. And then we also mounted this entire tube on a two-axis gimbal. So as we drive through the field and the boom is moving, we wanted to make sure we're maintaining a nadir, or vertical down-looking point of view. And so that two-axis gimbal continually adjusts for changes in the boom. In the picture, it looks like there's only two fiber optics coming out of the shutter tube, but there's actually two optics bound together in each one of those for a total of four. And then on the right-hand side, we have a weather-type box where we mounted the Flame spectrometer, which is visible in the front, and then the the NearQuest spectrometer is behind that. And then at the bottom of that picture is the Raspberry Pi microcomputer. This is what the system looks like mounted on the boom. This isn't actually the emergence plot. This is a different study that we use this system on. But essentially, you can see the shutter tubes, the fibers going over to the box with the spectrometers. Our hydraulically actuated boom allows us to raise and lower, so we can adjust height above plant canopy, and then also swing in and out so we can adjust what row we're collecting. And then you can't really see it, but mounted to this yellow plate on the boom is actually a GPS Trimble GPS receiver that we used for geolocation data. We used an RTK system on the tractor with auto steer to maintain a consistent path through the plots. This is actually a picture from when we were collecting emergence, and one thing I just would like to point out is look at how little biomass is present in this field at these very early stages, compared to the amount of soil present. So that's a big challenge with spectrometry, because soil has very high albedo, so it's very reflective, and it can wash out your spectra. To try to overcome that, what we did is we lowered the boom down as close as we could to the ground to try to maximize our plant biomass to soil ratio as we were collecting spectra. This is a screenshot of what the view looks like when we're collecting spectra. So on the left we have a purple and a red reflectance spectra, and that's from the Flame. And then on the right hand side, on the longer wavelengths, we have the yellow, orange, and turquoise reflectance spectra from the NearQuest. So some challenges and some of the challenges that we ran into and some solutions that we came up with. So I mentioned before the low biomass to high soil ratio because we're collecting data so early in the season. A couple of things we did to overcome that, the adjustable boom allowed us to lower those shutter tubes to, within maybe a foot or two of the soil. That reduced our field of view to 3 to 4 inches. So when the plants are just coming out of the ground, yeah, we're still getting a fair amount of soil, but as the plants grew, we were increasing the amount of biomass reflectance compared to the soil. Also using that gimbal allowed us, if we centered it over the row, it allowed us to kind of maintain that native field of view so it wasn't tilting from side to side and only collecting soil reflectance. When we first turned the system on and tested it, we had a very long integration time. So integration time is essentially how long it takes a spectrometer to gather enough light to give you a good spectra. So ours was about 35 seconds per file, and that was way too long because in 25-foot plots, moving at a snail's pace of a half a mile per hour with the tractor, we would be pretty much in through one plot and into the next in just 30 seconds. So we had to figure out a way to really bring that integration time down. So a few of the things that we did to do that was, one, we increased the size of the fiber optic. A larger fiber optic will convey more light to the spectrometer. We also increased the inlet slit from 25 microns to 100 microns on the spectrometer. A larger opening allows more light in. And then we reduced the number of dark measurements in our sequence. So essentially, a spectrometer counts photons. When a photon hits the detector in the spectrometer for a particular wavelength, it converts that to an electron, and then the computer counts electrons. All electronics are a little bit leaky with their electrons, and so the computer doesn't know if that electron came from a photon or is it just a leaky electron. So to accommodate for that machine error, what the machine does is it basically just closes off the light coming into the spectrometer. It counts the electrons, and then it says, okay, this is our machine error. Subtract this from every single spectra. And then also, we decided to shut off the NearQuest. The NearQuest had a much, much longer integration time than the Flame did. And so we decided, because we're looking at primarily determining plant biomass is associated with plant chlorophyll, which we can measure from the visible part of the spectrum. We can just get by with the Flame. Having the NearQuest reflectance data would be nice, but it wasn't worth the downside of the very long integration times. So we still have the NearQuest as part of the system, but it just wasn't used in the emergence study. From all this, we were able to reduce the integration time to about 3 seconds. So going through one plot and one pass, we were able to collect, 6 to 8 spectra from every single one of those plots for each pass with the tractor. So we won't know exactly how good of quality the data is until we really start doing the analysis on it, but we did do an early test that did provide some promising results. So what we did is we set up the spectrometer system over a patch of grass on a sunny day, and so that's going to be the spectra on the left. So on the x-axis is wavelength, and the y-axis is essentially the count of photons, and so the black line is going to be our plant reflectance. I'm sorry, the black line is the total solar radiance. The red line is our plant reflectance. And then the next day when it was cloudy, we actually measured that same spot of a patch of grass. And here, so then the blue line is going to be plant reflectance and the black line is total solar radiance. The graphs have very similar profiles, but obviously on a cloudy day, there is quite a bit less total energy available from the sun. So that's reflected in these spectra. So when we're comparing these two, when we convert them actually to percent reflectance, so we divide the plant reflectance by the total solar radiance and get percent reflectance, and we overlay them like we did in the spectra on the right, where red is the sunny day and the blue is the cloudy day, you can see particularly in the visible and then in the red edge area, we have very similar, they track very closely together. So that's encouraging that the system has the capability to basically collect accurate measurements that we can compare regardless of sky conditions. Data post-processing, so this is where we are right now. So the first step we did was geolocation. So we merged the GPS data timestamp with the spectra timestamp, so we know what spectra was part of what plot. And then in ArcGIS, we removed the border points, basically anything that fell without outside of 1 foot borders that we applied to every plot. We just discarded those. And then we subtracted the dark noise. I talked about that before. That's just data processing. And then we applied all of our corrections to the data and then convert to percent reflectance. So hopefully that data will be coming to me very shortly. Once I get it, then we'll have to determine the how we do the statistical analysis. So a common way to work with these huge data sets is to convert them into vegetation indexes. There's quite a few that are out there. NDVI may be savvy because it accounts for, you know, the high soil reflectance. And then future work, so eventually as we work on this system and perfect or improve it, it would be nice to like how now you have a harvest map, to eventually be able to produce a field map of essentially an early season plant population map, and then a grower would have that information available to make decisions. So thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
We don't have time for questions, but let's thank Steve.